Thursday, June 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President Obama may soon get permission from Republicans in Congress to negotiate a massive trade deal.
They use every way just to get the power to control Egypt as the Islamists controlled other parts of the world.
A bomb attack in Egypt near an ancient temple raises terror concerns. Also ahead, Myanmar's Aung San Suu Kyi visits China. And where have the women gone in country music? All that's coming up on today's International Edition. Leaders in the U.S. House of Representatives say they are confident but not yet certain that they have the support to pass sweeping trade legislation and are aiming to bring the package to a floor vote by the end of this week, even as they rush to resolve a last-minute hang-up over how to pay for aid to displaced workers. The vote to grant President Barack Obama fast-track authority to negotiate a massive Pacific Rim trade deal will be extremely tight by all accounts. Senior aides and lawmakers in GOP leadership are intent on scheduling the vote at the moment, and they believe that they have the votes locked up. House Speaker John Boehner, a Republican from Ohio, has been holding small meetings with lawmakers in his office as he seeks to maximize Republican yes votes. And he huddled late Tuesday with House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, a Democrat from California, that to address some unresolved spending and procedural issues. House Republicans will hold a closed-door meeting, which the trade vote is expected to be a major topic of conversation. VOA Cindy Sain covers the House of Representatives for us. Cindy, you've heard that a vote on trade promotion authority could come as soon as Friday.
Yes, it looks like there is a vote coming up. Republican House Speaker John Boehner said that they were going to move forward, that they felt comfortable, that there was momentum on the side of those who are for granting this trade promotion authority to the president. But they also said that they would have the vote whenever they have enough support. So that gave an indication that they're not quite so sure and that there's still a lot of persuading and arm-twisting and other things going on in the meanwhile.
Some of the fun things that we enjoy about the Hill, the backroom negotiations.
Yes, exactly, exactly. There were those who opposed the free trade, or the so-called fast-track authority, were out in force in front of the U.S. Capitol Wednesday. And it really was a broad coalition of retirees, environmentalists, feminists, some progressive Democrats, labor union leaders, who were saying, look, we have seen this movie before. We have seen trade deals in the past where thousands of American jobs were lost. I talked to someone from United Steelworkers, and he said, we are doing everything we can to put pressure on lawmakers. And apparently whenever they go to their home districts, they're just besieged. And polls show that the American public, of course, it depends on how the question is asked, but a lot of Americans say, I would rather have American jobs be saved than have cheaper imports.
Who are those opposed to giving the president trade negotiating authority? Is it along party lines or is it split?
It is split. You do have more Democrats who are opposed to it. I would say a greater number, most Republican lawmakers support it. And they think it's good for the economy. But there are some Republicans, sometimes referred to as Tea Party Republicans or fiscally conservative Republicans who are suspicious of granting any president that much authority, saying, look, Congress needs to weigh in on these complex trade deals. And you have a lot of Democrats who are very afraid to cast this vote. They are afraid that they're going to be targeted for primaries when the next election time comes around.
And, of course, if they give the president the authority, there's a big trade deal that is being negotiated in Asia, which would have a huge impact on the American economy.
Well, exactly right. And that is what this is all about. And that is why President Obama has put so much stake on this and has said that this is crucial to his foreign policy, to his economic policy, and that's what this fast-track authority is actually about. You're exactly right. It's this huge Trans-Pacific partnership, and the same people who are opposed to the fast-track authority are opposed to that deal and skeptical about it and thinks it will be bad for American workers. And the same people who support it, you know, they most Republicans agree with the president on this and saying, look, if the U.S. is left out in the cold of this major economic force in Asia, then that's going to be even worse for workers.
Cindy Sain covers The Hill for Voice of America. Cindy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The White House, meanwhile, is working with House GOP leadership to solidify Democratic support. A list of at least 22 Democratic supporters of the so-called Trade Promotion Authority is said to have been drafted while efforts continue to identify other lawmakers believed to still be in play. Sources involved in canvassing for support say from 25 to 30 Democrats must vote for the package for it to pass. Well, the passage of power is happening on the football pitch, apparently, as some perennial world powers are now bowing to the United States of America. Who would have thought? It's trending on social media right now. Michael Lippin joins me in the studio. Michael, it's not often that U.S. soccer gets the spotlight. How did this happen?
Right, Jim, that is true. You know, the U.S. men's national team in football is making an impact when the hashtag USMNT is the top trending item on Twitter in the United States and the number two trending item worldwide. But that's what happens when a U.S. team that's ranked 27th in the world beats the number one ranked team and reigning World Cup champion Germany on German soil for the very first time. Now, I was watching the end of that match myself, and seeing U.S. player Bobby Woods score that winning goal in the 87th minute was incredible. And the U.S. held on for a famous 2-1 victory over the Germans in Cologne. Analytics website Topsy shows that the hashtag USMNT was tweeted, get this, 47,000 times in the hour after the match ended. That's about the same number of tweets featuring USMNT that were posted in an entire day last Friday when the U.S. men's team achieved another impressive milestone by beating the Netherlands for the first time in a match in Amsterdam.
Wow, that's very impressive. You know, one of the other things we hope is going to be trending soon is our new Twitter account.
Well, that's true. We have a new Twitter account. It's called at VOA underscore IE. We're going to use that as a platform to engage with our audience, and we look forward to hearing from everyone on that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I understand that that USA match, of course, was just an international friendly. Germany was missing some of its best players.
And, it was.
So why are people making such a big deal out of this?
Well, I'll tell you why. And that's because the U.S. team also was weakened somewhat through the absence of key goal scorers like Clint Dempsey and Jozy Altidore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's harder for Germany supporters to really downplay their defeat that way. And, you know, the vast majority of U.S. fans on Twitter have been inundating the site with messages of celebration. One tweet that got attention is from Steve Newman. He's a player for the New England Revolution team, which is part of U.S. Major League Soccer, or MLS. He said, wow, consecutive away wins against the Netherlands and Germany. Not too shabby. Now go win the World Cup. Hashtag, I believe that we will win. Now, the Gold Cup is the North American Regional Football Tournament, and it's the main competitive event for the U.S. men's team this year. It starts on July 7th. And if the U.S. wins it, it will qualify for the next FIFA Confederations Cup, Jim.
All right. Exciting times for U.S. men's national soccer team.
You bet.
Football, as other people call it around the world, but we'll call it soccer. Michael Lippin joins us, and you can follow him on Twitter. It's at Michael underscore Lippin. And I'm on there as well, at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artist. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
A suicide bomber blew himself up Wednesday outside the ancient Karnak Temple in southern Egypt in an attack that left four people wounded. Officials said the attack involved two other people who were killed by police and that none of the wounded were tourists. The temple is in the city of Luxor, which is a part of a UNESCO World Heritage Site on the banks of the Nile that is a major tourist attraction for both foreign and Egyptian tourists. There was no immediate claim of responsibility. VOA's Jeffrey Young spoke with Egyptian Tawfiq Hamid, who is an analyst at the Potomac Institute for Policy Studies in Arlington, to find out more about the implications this attack may hold.
Mr. Hamid, once again we see an attack on a very important Egyptian tourist site. And it makes me think about the late 1990s when there was a rash of these incidents back then directed against the government of Hosni Mubarak. Is it fair to say that this incident today might be directed against the government of al-Sisi?
Absolutely. It's the same tactic but used against a different person. They are the same people, the radical, the terrorists, the jihadists, the Islamists, and they use every way just to get the power to control Egypt as the Islamists controlled other parts of the world.
But tourism is such an important aspect of the Egyptian economy that when you have incidents like this and you scare away tourists, it doesn't just affect the government of Egypt. It affects a whole lot of people in the private sector who make their money by selling things and doing things for tourists. So doesn't this really have a broad-based impact?
That's absolutely correct. And here the government can play an important role by having a media campaign to teach people that the damage that's happening in their economy is to a great extent, caused by such attacks or suicidal bombing or terrorism. It's important to direct the anger of people against the jihadists and the radicals rather than the government. And this needs a very powerful media campaign to inform people that the economical damage that's happening or any economical damage that will happen, they should blame only the radicals and they should turn against them rather than the government. And that is a very important part here that the government can play this role of redirecting the anger toward the real people who deserve it.
I am surprised that someone within the Egyptian government hasn't already thought of this campaign and started it. It makes you wonder, why haven't they done this before?
Really, it's hard to understand exactly how they think, but I'm talking here from a cognitive psychology background, which is part of my research as well in addition to the experience in radicalism. It's important to create a psychological link between things. There is a mechanism in the brain called the spreading activation model that links things together. So if you now use this event to create a negative reinforcement against the radicals, more negative reinforcement to show that the economy can be weakened, yes, but this is because of these people. People will turn more against them. In fact, people are already turning against them. In this incident, for example, people have a taxi driver informed the police about these radicals, so the attack was aborted at a very early stage before killing much more people. So there is some momentum, but it must be magnified more and it must be pushed to the highest level because we are dealing with a real threat here.
Tawfiq Hamid is an analyst with the Potomac Institute for Policy Studies in Washington. I'm Jeffrey Young, VOA News.
This is VOA's International Edition. Myanmar opposition leader Aung San Suu Kyi has begun a visit to China to bolster diplomatic ties that have been tested as a result of her country's democratic reforms. China's Communist Party, a major ally of Myanmar's former military junta, is hosting the Myanmar democracy icon, who is traveling with a delegation from her National League for Democracy. A study by the RAND Corporation says businesses face a growing threat from cybercrime, and many firms think they're losing the fight against criminals who steal money or trade secrets. The report says hackers are becoming more skillful in their tools, more effective, and the market for their stolen information is flourishing. RAND says that defensive measures can cut the cost of cyber attacks, but it warns that hackers are constantly evolving and finding new ways to attack. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's premier newsmaker interview program. If you have ideas for guests or topics, or want to comment on one of our programs, please write to us at Press Conference USA, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. That's Press Conference USA, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or if you have access to the internet, send us an email to pcusa@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is pcusa@voanews.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
Where have the women gone in country music? You know, there used to be many prominent female stars, and our own David Byrd and Nikki Strong have come to the studio to try to figure out the reason for this gender skew in country music today.
If you've listened to country radio any time in the past few years, you've probably heard the names of Dierks Bentley, Brad Paisley, Darius Rucker, Lee Bryce, Luke Bryan, Kenny Chesney, Jason Aldean, of course. But what you might not have heard is too many women's names. That's a problem, at least according to some of the ladies of country. But consultant Keith Hill doesn't think so. To talk about this, I'm joined by Nikki Strong. Nikki, welcome.
How are you doing?
I am well. I am well. I did that little rundown there of the artists because that's the guys that played when I was coming to work.
Yes.
It's in about a 45-minute time period. Mm-hmm. It was the only female voices I heard were from Lady Antebellum and from Little Big Town. But as far as solo female artists, there aren't that many being played on country radio.
No.
And this guy, Keith Hill, who's supposedly a big guru in country programming, has set off a bit of a storm. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, he was interviewed and he talked about that if you want to win in the ratings game in country radio, take the women out. He pretty much said, you know, the meat of country music is pretty much bro music. It's all the guys.
Right.
Women are like tomatoes.
So we're talking guys like Luke Bryan, Blake Shelton,
exactly.
Kenny Chesney,
yes.
Jason Aldean, of course.
Oh, yes, Jason, who are all on the charts right now.
Right.
But it caused a real big firestorm among a lot of artists, particularly women artists. Miranda Lambert was one of the most outspoken.
Mm.
She made an excellent point. She said it's very dangerous to say that. She said because, first of all, it reduces women in their contribution, number one. She said also it makes women less valuable. So it makes labels less willing to sign women country artists,
right.
Makes them less willing to put resources behind them, good writers, good producers, and they feel like they're not going to make well on their investment. And when you have consultants like Mr. Hill, who are consulting radio stations,
right.
and who are making these major decisions, he's impacting the bottom line for a lot of women, a lot of households. And this mentality of don't play too many women on music, it's not just across country, it's across other genres as well.
Hmm.
And I know part of it dates back to when women, really, they were only like 10% of the artists that were played on radio.
Right.
So consultants would say, spread them out. But during the course of the years and under the game of telephone, it became don't put two women back to back because it'll alienate your female listeners. So he also talked about when he does research that a lot of women, when they do research, will turn away when there's too many women artists. But there are other consultants that disagree with him as well.
And see, nobody says don't put two guys back to back.
Exactly.
So that formula doesn't hold.
And they don't say, oh, well, if women don't, you know, listen to the guys, don't play them back to back.
Right.
They just get rid of that song.
Right, exactly. See, I would think it would be a function of, is it a good song, regardless of who sings it.
Right, right. And some people were saying that, you know, as you have more female country artists trying to do like the pop thing, that's not going to work either.
Mm.
But again, it gets dangerous if you feel like, okay, I have a woman artist, I have to do what's been proven.
Uh-huh.
I have to try and Taylor Swift her,
mm-hmm.
you know, as opposed to really developing her voice.
We'd love to hear your opinion about this. You can post it on our Facebook page. That's VOA Music. You can also post a comment on Nikki's show, Country Hits USA. That's at voanews.com.
And if you have any opinions or comments on that, you can also write to us at voaasia@voanews.com. Stop by our Facebook page at VOA Asia. We're on Twitter as well. And of course, our website is voanews.com. You can stop by there anytime you like. You've been listening to International Edition, and we hope you continue to listen to us at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Another civil society activist has received a harsh sentence in Iran. Artist Atena Feragdoni has been sentenced to 12 and a half years in prison for drawings and other content critical of the government, which she posted on Facebook. She was charged with crimes against national security, including propaganda against the state and insulting the supreme leader and members of parliament. Amnesty International called the sentencing a terrible injustice and noted that such harsh and unjust sentences seem to be part of a disturbing trend in Iran, where the cost of voicing peaceful dissent is escalating. In May, anti-death penalty activist Atena Daemi was sentenced to 7 years in prison, also on national security charges. She had posted critical remarks about executions and human rights violations online and had participated in gatherings outside prisons in solidarity with families of death row prisoners. Amnesty International and other human rights monitors consider both Atena Feragdoni and Atena Daemi prisoners of conscience, held solely for the peaceful exercise of their right to freedom of expression. President Barack Obama has said strong, successful countries require strong and vibrant civil societies.
Human progress has been propelled not just by famous leaders, not just by states, but by ordinary men and women who believe that change is possible, by citizens who are willing to stand up against incredible odds and great danger, not only to protect their own rights, but to extend rights to others.
Around the world, fundamental freedoms are under threat, said President Obama. And when they are, when the space for civil society to operate becomes more restricted, the United States will work to open it up and speak out for those whose rights have been violated and whose voices have been silenced. The United States continues to call on the government of Iran to release all who have been unjustly imprisoned for the peaceful exercise of their fundamental rights and to live up to its own laws as well as its international obligations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.